How goes it, everybody? What's up? Welcome to the show, Broken Tailed Dog Podcast. It's your boy, Josh Ricardo. Hello. I am a, as some of you may know, I am a fanatical Bruce Springsteen fan. Fell in love with the guy. Not physically, because I never met him, but fell in love with him via his voice and his words. Probably when I turned 30. I mean, I knew about his music, but when you... I feel like for what he's writing about and what he's saying, if you do a deep dive into the guy, you really can't embody or embrace or understand what some of the subject matter is unless you've experienced somewhat of a life. And it helps if you come from kind of a rough background. So it just fits me perfect. So I've been going to a lot of those shows, reading all the research I can get on him, you know, about the band, everything. I've just jumped into it over the last like 10 years. 8 years, especially the last five. But I've yet to meet, even though he's a huge star, Bruce Springsteen, I've yet to meet a comic that's on my level of fandom. And when I found out my friend Brendan was a colossal Bruce fan, I said, shit, well, I have to have you on because we have to talk about that. Because even though the show predominantly focuses on females in the industry, every now and again, I mix it up and throw a male on, a male comic on, or whoever, and I need to talk about this. There's no way. So, considering last week's episode was about my depression, I figure this week I'll go the exact opposite and talk about my joy. So, I have Brendan Fitzgibbons on. Brendan is a funny comic. He also produces a couple really great shows here in the city. That a lot of people know about, and he's also doing a lot of commercials and all his own shit, which we'll talk about too. So, without any further ado, here's Brendan talking about Bruce with me. Amazing. All right, big game, big show, big life. Josh Cardo, Broken Tail Dog. I have never met anybody in the comedy game that was as big a fan of Bruce Springsteen as I am. Now, okay, I have on Brendan Fitzgibbons. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Brendan's a really funny comic. He's also a writer. Does tons of shit. In the words of his good friend Lance Weiss, who's a friend of the show's, Brendan's blowing up, man. Brendan's blowing up. He has so much going on.
He always says that.
Guys, God, that guy has a life. So I know Brendan through Lance. And actually, we've had a few conversations, but never like anything in depth.
Yeah, I've seen used to see you at the Pair all the time.
Yeah, so now
Pair legend.
We're legends in our own right.
Brendan, can I tell a quick Pair story? That's gonna make you laugh.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was at my commercial agent's, and he was talking to me. He doesn't know stand up, and he was like, "Yeah, he's an older guy. He's been in the game for like 30 years." And he goes, "You know, one of our fellow agents here just started doing stand up, and she did some show at this place called the Grizzly Pear," and he goes, "What is that? It's awful." But he was like so outraged by just the concept of it. It was so funny, and Lance actually happened to be there, and we were crying laughing. He's like, "What is that?"
So, for those of you that don't live in New York City, Grizzly Pear is it's not a comedy club necessarily, even though they do comedy pretty much seven nights a week. The weekends aren't as awful, but
the weekend shows, man, were good. I will stand by the weekend shows.
And they were booked shows, and they used to get some cool acts on there, and some not so cool acts. But so it's one of those shows where you'll see a lot of like up and coming guys, and then randomly you'll have like some really word I'm looking for, established guy.
But nothing makes me happier than getting an outsider's perspective on the scene sometimes. It makes me laugh. Like one time I did the Eastville open mic, and my good buddy Pat was visiting me. He was my college roommate, and he like sat me aside, and he was just like, "Dude, are you okay?"
Right?
After the Eastville open mic, because to us, it's just so normal now.
Yeah.
So it's always hilarious to get an outside perspective. I love that.
My mom once came to visit, and on my dime, by the way. never again, Mom. And I didn't just move here, but I've been here a minute. And she went by Caroline's, and then she saw me in the Village Lantern. This is before the Village Lantern was redone, so it was still kind of like, I mean, now it has like some paint on it. Before it did not.
Yeah.
This is back like I think eight or 9 years ago, And I had played Caroline's a couple times at that point. Nothing significant, just whatever. And someone had told her that, and she walked by and then saw me directly after that at Village Atlanta. And she goes to me,
"Oh no,
you know, I think Caroline's is where you belong. I don't know if I don't think this Village Lantern is for you." And it really bothered me in the moment.
Yes.
Not so much now, because now it's funny, but just the failures of your life.
Oh, like, it's hilarious.
And you feel like you're winning a little bit. Like, oh, I got this yes. going.
Yeah.
You're not. Because no one in stand, unless, like, I have people all the time go, "Hey, I saw this really funny stand-up special with, you know, insert any comedian that has a Netflix special."
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's great, man. That's great. And they want to come to you, like, to talk about somebody else's success.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's really good. It's like the only way to relate to you. So they're just like, yeah, you know. Or, like, you should be more like Chris Rock.
Yeah. Well, you should try and do less comic like standing. Have you tried to do that? Have you ever thought about doing that? Yeah, I thought about doing some stuff on television, the
Tonight
Show. Maybe
try more racial stuff. Maybe that's your game.
It's unbelievable. But you're with somebody that's in the business, too, though, right? Your
yes,
partner is in
my
the
girlfriend
business.
Is... Girlfriend.
His partner, like, he's
partner.
Gay.
Yeah.
He's kind of hoping to start a gay rumor.
My partner is Antonio Banderas.
So you used to have someone like, I mean, and she's not a stand-up, right?
So she's actually just started doing stand-up, which is cool, but I actually really enjoy the fact that we're in two completely different scenes, and
facets,
I don't care
yeah.
about any of her scene shit. She
yeah.
doesn't care about mine.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like...
That's awesome.
I love that, but we're still performers, so we keep it independent. Mm-hmm. And now she started doing stand-up, and she's asking me if stuff's funny, and I'm like... Oh my God! Is this how I've sounded for the last 3 years?
At least you guys have a partnership where you can say that. It's one of those things where, like, my wife, she used to be a musical theater major, so she understands like late nights. She understands like
yeah, that's good.
So I got lucky.
Yeah.
But you're in a good situation because at least your wife understands like, oh, he has to do this. I think a lot of people, like comics, when they get married, the people don't really understand dating in general.
Yeah, what they don't get, I think, is the every nightness of it. That's the thing. I think they, like, everybody when you start dating a comic or a performer, you think, like, you're like, oh, it's all the time. They're like, okay, well, they don't really mean that.
Yeah.
I've gotten called selfish by every single person I've ever dated, for sure.
So
aggressively.
You know, okay, so, being a stand-up, I think there's, being anything in entertainment, you have to be selfish.
You
right?
have to be,
there's a level
no
of selfishness.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you can tell me if you agree, I feel like comics in general are some of the worst human beings I've ever met. I mean, and some of them are the greatest guys I've ever met, greatest
yeah.
people I've ever met. But the majority, I mean, I've been in the game 11 years now, the majority have always been very self-absorbed,
yeah.
completely paranoid, very not giving, you know, not it's not a generous group because you get fucked over so much.
I think also, though, I agree with that. Mostly, I think, like, I have enjoyed Sam the most recently because I've kind of just subtracted those people from my life. Like,
mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of the open mic scene, a lot of that scene. But I do think there is a level of self-involvement in stand-up comedy that is unparalleled because
yeah.
you have to literally be in your head about
more so than
what,
improvising,
yeah.
more so than acting.
Because it's about what are you going to
it's not
do.
A team sport.
It's not even acting, you could argue, is a team because you're getting other people's words.
Yeah.
It's like every day you have to be like, what am I going to me, Brendan, me, Josh, me, Bruce Springsteen, what am I?
the greatest of all time.
What are we going to do? You know, like, what are we going to do? What am I going to do today? What am I going to say? So it's like, yeah, you have to constantly be thinking about yourself.
Yeah. So I like the point you made about minusing out people from your life. And I think the luxury, just to make it clear for people at home that you can afford to do that now, is that you're a working writer. You have stuff going
yeah.
on. And I think that helps separate the muck, right?
Yes.
So I think the part that pulls me down anyways as a comic is the constant singing for my supper, dancing for bookers, just being like, "Hey, you got a new spot? You got a new room for me?" And the palm pressing. I think the beauty of being a well known comic is the poppin' factor.
Yeah.
Where at any given moment,
God.
Any club in the nation, you can go. I and there's probably 12 guys that can do that right now. Off the top of my head, I can think of. They could probably go in any comedy
and to
club.
Any club. Yeah.
Any club, seller, no matter what, they can go.
You're right. It's
like,
a very
I would
select
like
few.
10 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour even.
Yeah.
So
Dangerfield,
yeah. When he did dig Dangerfield up, he could pop it anywhere.
Dangerfield.
So I think that's interesting because I think that eliminates a lot of the bullshit for you.
Yes.
If you know for a fact that you go, "Hey, I am working on stuff. Enough people in the business know I'm working.
Yeah.
So that allows me some leverage to go, can I get up? And they go, sure, we'd love to have you. Or even them approach you going, hey, we'd love to have
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And it also helps to have – I produce my own show, so I know that I can at least get up there so I don't feel like a panic if I yeah. don't get on certain shows.
Yeah, you know that you have caring. Something.
Yeah, I kind of stopped caring about getting on all these shows as much.
Because
as
you know you have something in the back
yeah,
pocket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
you're at a place where I am actually at, where I am in a position where I don't necessarily want to be beholden to anyone
yeah.
unless it's something that's actually worth being beholden to. I mean, obviously, beholden, if it's worth it, then it's not. It's a partnership, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
a
yeah.
mutual thing. But the phrasing of beholden means like, okay, yeah. well, I have to go in and do this and say hello to this and do that and kiss this ass because
yeah.
I need to get up. You're in a position now where, like you said, you're allowed to go, hey, it's not really worth my stress and my time to be
yeah.
treated poorly because I have this room where I can go work some stuff out.
Yeah.
It's a great – it's called Gandhi. It's a great show.
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday here in New York City. And
Lance
it's
will
all
also
over.
Be there probably doing an hour and a half of time. Probably at the end.
He's working on his Netflix special so he can get the popping right.
Yeah, 2 hours. 2 hour quick set for Lance at the end of the show.
I think it's a great move. In fact, over the course of 5 or 6 years, I think maybe you've seen this too. A lot of guys that ran their own show woke up one morning and got some management out of it too and got some opportunity out of it.
It's just like you get to meet – it's the best move you can do, and I think it speaks to a larger trend in comedy now, which I think we all have to come to terms with the fact that we have to sort of be good and do other shit than just rely on stand-up. Like,
sure.
just get your own – you know what I mean? It's like everyone has to get their own thing going. It's a hard truth that I think some comics that we know are still fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
They still think, like, if I do enough comic strip spots – the booker from the 1980s Showtime late night show
yeah.
is going to show up and book you. It's like it's that time is so gone.
Yeah.
And it's like we can get mad about it or we can just adapt. You know, it's like getting mad at Blockbuster closing. It's like, look, the marketplace
changed.
It's changed.
Yeah.
It's radically shifted. And if we don't see that, then I'm sorry. I think it's on us. Like
I love the way it's changed because I've always
yeah.
been someone that has been prone to create my own content.
So that's it.
It's a beautiful thing. The part that has hindered me is that part where – how do I put this in a way that is somewhat eloquent and not just completely blockhead? The part where people go, well, you know, you're not viral. You know what I mean? Like I have tons of work out that's actually – I'm pretty proud of, you know? And
yeah.
So you're a guy who works within all forms of media.
Yeah.
I saw you in a commercial last year for the NFL, right?
Yeah, yeah,
it was digital, or was it?
That
was national.
That actually, was on, yeah, it actually made on TV, yeah.
That's awesome. And you also have done some digital commercial
yes.
stuff. You've gotten work in commercials, which is amazing.
Yes.
So you have something when you're real to go, hey, look, I've done something where people can go, oh, he's done that.
Yeah.
This guy's done that, so let's do this, right?
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily have that, but I have something that has like a million views combined.
Dude, that's really good, man.
It's really good. But they go, is it viral? No, no. But then if you look at like what I'm doing, if I'm making it, like say I'm making a sitcom, because the show's like a web series sitcom, right? And you look at what's viral, what is fucking viral? It's like a girl putting a makeup on. Like what?
Yeah, yeah,
if you
yeah.
look at some of the stuff, you're like, how does this apply to what I want to do? And that's the tricky part, is applying it in a way that's meaningful not only to myself but artistically creative.
Right.
And there's some integrity to it. And you found a way to mix both.
Can I pitch a viral thing? It's a puppy sitting on top of a baby heckling a comedian. That shit would
huge.
Go crazy,
be
bro.
Huge.
Take down! Just say take down 600,000 hits.
We would be huge.
No, I mean, dude, but I've done it all too. Like, I just produced a video right before the election that I made myself, and I put my own money into it, and nobody saw it. But
crazy,
I really
right?
like it, though.
Yeah, you
so
like it. Is
it's
that all
like,
that matters?
Yeah, yeah, I think it's trying not to be attached to the outcome, but that's so hard. And then thing
that's
is
a John Wooden phrasing, right, which I always love, where he talks about
I only quote John Wooden.
I love John Wooden. I love like the journey is what it's about. The journey, and it's about the preparation. And I focus on the preparation. I don't focus on the victory. Because that's kind of out of my control.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Which is interesting. Because that's kind of what you're saying, which I agree with. But also,
it's
don't you
hard
think.
Hard as hell.
But also, don't you agree that you think because you have stuff going on right now, it's a little easy to go. It's
yes.
a little easier to go, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Yes, of course it is. And that's why I think that people who are more famous actually tend to be more gracious and nice because they're not hustling as much.
Yeah.
They're not struggling I absolutely think that's true. It's very easy for Seinfeld to be like, eh, it's okay.
I'll get him next time.
I mean, it's all right, man. It's just a set. Whatever, it's just one set. I totally believe that. But I think that, yeah, man, I mean, yeah, because I remember when I first started making stuff and I was like, this has got to go huge. My thing is like, I don't like it when people in the industry are like, you got to be on Vine. You got to be on... And I'm like, dude, no, you don't. I know that everybody says that, yeah. But that's not really true.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's not. I'm not on Instagram, dude. I'm not even on Instagram.
Well, I mean, if you're working, like, what do you write? Can you say what you're writing for right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm in between seasons for this show for Huffington Post. It's a sketch show called Celebrities Have Issues. I was the head writer for it, which is just like, we get celebrities, they do sketches for their causes. We had this one with Kristen Bell that went really big.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also working on a series for Comedy Central Online that hopefully will be going to a pilot.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's... But yeah, dude, it's yeah, you're right. It is easier to be like, oh, everything's fine. But yeah, when you start. But I just feel like that I've been told you need to be on Vine. I've been told you need to be on Snapchat.
Yeah, and Vine
like,
is now gone.
Vine's gone. And then in a year, people are going to be like, what's Snapchat? Like,
I completely agree with you. And I agree with you because you get to a point where you're like, I don't necessarily want to share my private life.
Yeah.
I want to tell my stories and my jokes. And I want people to come out. And I want to share humorous things with them so they understand like what my humor is, and if they're into it, they can come follow me and all that. But I don't want to show you my dog or all this shit. I don't want to show you this shit.
Yeah, here is a shoe. I just feel like do what you want. It's like anything else. If you like doing that shit, dude, I don't. Like I like Twitter because I feel like it makes you write something.
That's what I mean.
I think
yeah,
it's very nice. And I like to I like that. And
it's a muscle.
Yeah. So it's like if you like to do that stuff, do it. But I don't think you have to because I know some comics are like, well, I have to get into Snapchat. I'm like, no, you're going to hate it.
And it's not wrong, but it's not right either. To tell
it's definitely
someone,
not wrong.
I'm not – I don't – okay. In the words of Tupac, this is back in the 90s, so you know, do the inflation for yourself. You give me that $12, I'll give you them 10 tracks. After that, that's all I got for you. Like there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Everything else I do has nothing to do with my music. If you want to hear it, you buy it, and that's that. That is the only agreement we have.
Tupac only had $12 his whole life, dude.
You give me your $12, and I'll give you them 10 tracks.
By the way, that's Tupac, that album would be free now. Sorry. So you actually killed it back then. You actually made no money.
So I'm like, fuck, I don't know. You get to a point now where you're like, all this stuff that's out there, there's so much of it.
Yeah.
How do you go, okay, so when you got your gig at Huffington Post, you know they have built-in viewers.
Which is huge.
Which is amazing.
Huge. It's everything, actually.
Because you're allowed to utilize your talents that, you know, would be utilized out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
To do and produce with
I think
with
like all you all we all want is an audience, right? That's all all any stand-up wants is people to come see them perform and have a big microphone to say the things you want to say. So
sure.
It's like I would rather it be my audience, but the fact that I got to use their audience to I mean they were really pretty good. I mean they didn't change too many sketches. I would say we mostly got to keep most of what we wanted, so it was great.
Mm-hmm.
So that was awesome. But of course eventually I'd want my own audience to be sizable. I mean, somebody like freaking Sandler could just be like, here you go. Sandler could release a movie on Facebook and a million people would see it.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, like, something like that is awesome. I only reference early 90s people.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, wow, that was pretty. It's kind of at the end of
Sandler,
it.
Sandler, I don't know why. I think it's just because I saw his Facebook page has like 47 million likes. I came across
it. He's like Sriracha, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether you like it or not, like,
it's there.
He's going to be in the refrigerator.
And it's
he's
there.
In everybody's
and
refrigerator.
There's no stopping it. That's very true.
He's not
dude.
Going anywhere, man.
He's
going
to be there.
That's how far along the dude is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you look at like a Netflix and they just signed, you know, Seinfeld to his specials and also the
Eating
in Cars, yeah.
And oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they just signed him.
Oh, I saw the Chappelle thing. That's awesome.
And Chris Rock. So they got Chappelle, Chris Rock, and Seinfeld. I think each of them are at least producing two comedy specials for Netflix.
Oh, my God.
Do you think that Netflix is kind of skipping a step? You have HBO, right, that takes these people and they kind of make them into what they are in a way, right? Like you look at Chappelle and Killing Him Softly, it's legendary. You're like, oh, my God, it's legendary. Chris Rock, his three specials are like, fuck, those are amazing.
Pain,
I mean, I know he did more than three, but specifically the first three are amazing. Bring the Pain, Bigger and Blacker, and then Kill the Messenger.
Oh, that's right.
Was it Kill the Messenger or what was the third one? Never Scared. Sorry, Never Scared was the third one. And you're like, damn, man, those are great bodies of work.
Yeah.
Via HBO.
Yeah.
Helping cultivate, paying basically nothing. They've always talked about how cheap HBO is.
That's funny.
And now Netflix is like, hey, we got pretty much unlimited resources.
There's so much, so much money.
Let me throw some money at you.
They have so much
and
money.
And get you. Do you think... Because...
Do you have a number stupid. To... I need a number to Netflix.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Brendan wants a number to Netflix. Netflix. He's a dial-in now. If you have a customer service rep, they can speak on about his special. His many
so you
credits.
Think like you... I, but they also... They've given some... Like Mike Kaplan has one.
Tons of people have them now. There's like a lot
from
of
From Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people from Netflix that have them. And CISO's doing their thing. But I get like Netflix now is the where... like. Where to be is Netflix as far as comedy is concerned, as far as what the surface looks like. But when you like say Richard Pryor, you know, live on the Sunset Strip, he talks about how I didn't know if I wanted to do this because I didn't know if I was pissed off enough. I don't know if I was pissed about anything enough to come out and do jokes.
That's cool.
And I don't think a lot of people understand that unless they're associated That's with performing, really cool. right? Yeah, especially stand-up. So sometimes they think, okay, you're getting these guys, which is awesome. They're all legends. They're all incredible. You're going to get a great product regardless, which is a safe bet. But are they pissed off enough?
That's interesting. Well, I have this theory that I think if Hollywood makes people less funny, I think that's definitely true. I don't think that's necessarily a super unique theory, but I feel like if you get too involved, that's good. Like Chappelle is removed, like that he went to Ohio and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think if you get too into it, I think Seinfeld still has an edge. I think so. I think he's stayed outside of it. But like anybody, like Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy, I mean, these guys just got like. And I get it. They stopped stand-up because they're just doing movies. It's like, why would you do stand-up? Why would you go to a Long Island club and get yelled at when you could just sit in a trailer? Or Steve Martin said he was like on the beach in Cannes one time, and he's like, why would I do stand-up? What the hell? Why would I fight people?
It's a valid
point. At the Grizzly Pear.
Right? It's a valid point. You have to really love
the
hand-to-hand combat.
Of it. You have to love that, dude.
Yeah. That it has to be inside you.
I blame no one that walks away. I completely understand.
If you already have something going.
Yeah, I completely understand. I would love it if Eddie Murphy was doing stand-up or Steve Martin, but I completely understand.
Why they won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. It's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting thing. I think Netflix is also just like, they're like the brand now, so they're just like living up to it.
Yeah, and I think I was talking to my buddy who works for YouTube, and I think it's an interesting point, and I think even the audience will find it interesting. He was saying the reason why Netflix will beat HBO is because the parts that they're really good at that the other one isn't, Netflix can make up their ground a lot faster than HBO. Because HBO is not – they're new to this whole streaming game. If you ever go to HBO Go, the app, it's not great. It's not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. It's better than the other ones, but it's not as good as Netflix. So that's an infrastructure they have to understand and learn. Right. Netflix is based off that, so they're amazing at it.
They're already ahead of the game.
But HBO has the content part, but now Netflix is figuring out how to do that too. So they're catching – I mean, they're going to end up catching and then surpassing.
Also, heads up to anyone at HBO. We will also do our specials there.
Yeah, don't worry about it. If you want to contact me
– Heads up.
I want to bring you guys back to glory.
We're ready, baby.
Build it on our backs, please.
Yeah.
So you read Bruce's book. We talked about this.
Oh, my God.
So I love Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, my God.
The audience knows. Like, I'm fanatical about it.
Do you have a moment?
I have several moments, and I do have a moment.
No, a moment. Sorry. A moment when you knew that this guy was for you. I have an exact moment.
Okay, I do. You go. You tell yours first.
So I have, like, three moments in my life where I'm like, that absolutely changed my life. Like, there's only three. I can think of three of them.
Okay.
And one was.
I love this.
One was, it was the night before John Kerry. It was the night before the election, 2004. I was sitting in my apartment. I have no idea. I was in a bro apartment in Iowa, University of Iowa, and we were watching C-SPAN. I have no idea why that was
What's a bro apartment? Is that like a fraternity?
It's apartment? A bro apartment, meaning like. We had like a snake.
Oh, okay.
And like a black light.
Yeah, that makes sense.
My roommates were named Mac and Jeff, and they just wanted to drink and like talk about Spider-Man and Eminem. And so I'm watching C-SPAN. I have no idea why. And Springsteen comes on, and my knowledge of Springsteen up to that point was I always thought he was kind of a joke. I thought it was like the Born in the USA thing was kind of hokey.
It's the 80s,
and, like,
80s.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what he is. And then he played three acoustic songs, Thunder Road, Promised Land, I think in No Surrender, and that was it. I was like, what?
Sold.
Completely. I was like in complete shock. Like, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I had no idea it existed. I was like, oh my God. I remember just sitting there like absolutely stunned. And from then on, I was like in so deep, dude.
Yeah.
I'm in so deep, this Springsteen, dude. It's uncomfortable.
It's almost upsetting because I don't know the man physically. I don't know him.
Uncomfortable how
so
deep I am in this.
My moment is similar. I think honestly, you gotta be well beyond your, you gotta be like almost 30 to really, to really embody what the dude's talking about. Because the same thing, like I'm 35, yeah. So the knowledge I had of him in my early 20s and even in my teen years is like, oh, it's the guy from that video with Courtney Cox.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
You know, which is so fucking stupid. When I say it out loud, I almost threw up just now.
But he even in his book admits that it was stupid, yeah. Which I love about him.
Everything about the book was incredible. Yeah. So my moment is I'm 27 at the time, and I am – this is a lot of my stories. I'm in my apartment in East Village, and I'm having sex with this woman – nice. On my couch, and in the background, is Jungleland, and it's the, you know, the professor Roy Bittan, his piano part,
yeah,
comes in.
Professor,
and I remember, like, I knew for a fact what I felt wasn't the girl. I knew like there was nothing between her that was necessarily going to last longer than a couple months. But once I heard that song, I didn't understand the level of genius. Because I didn't know the albums as well then. I knew, like, obviously.
So was this on the radio or where was this?
No. So remember HBO did that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame concert with everybody in it?
Oh, yes. Like at the Garden. Of course I watched that.
It was a live version of that.
Yes, I saw that.
And it was playing while she was, like, writing me. And it was, like, this moment of, like, it was
dude,
almost
that's actually
cinematic.
A perfect way to have sex, I think.
It was – I almost want
to
play it every
and
time.
You also be
sex.
Like, hey, I love your Jungle End. Your Jungle Land is incredible.
Your Jungle Land's amazing downstairs.
I want to feel your Jungle Land.
I want to fly my one-engine plane into your Jungle. So that's like my – then I deep dived. So what's your favorite Bruce album?
Oh, my God. I was worried you were going to ask me this question. I really
– it's a hard question.
I was really worried. I actually seriously thought about what my answer was going to be if you asked me this question before. Because I've gotten it before and I'm like, God.
Gun to my head.
I'm going to have to say Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yes!
Gun to my head. So but that's
darkness,
so hard, though.
But it is, but it isn't.
So fucking hard.
My favorite song in the history of all songs is Something in the Night. I actually walked down the aisle. Even though the bride's supposed to have a song, I made sure I had that song playing when I walked to
dude,
my position.
Dude, so I saw him this summer, and he played it for the first time.
In Jersey?
In MetLife.
Oh!
Dude, at the stadium. And dude, he told this incredible story. I went with Megan Hanley. And because she – oh, Megan Hanley's a huge fan, dude.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Hanley, I made – this was the first time she went. So, dude, he told this story about, like, the Jersey summers and then just chills. And then he just went right into that song.
Oh,
like,
it's one of the greatest songs like, ever. Oh, it's the greatest song to me ever made. Something that – it's off Darkness of the Town. So, for me, it's Darkness, River – Born to Run, then what's the fourth? Fuck, I know I have a fourth. Born to Run, then it's probably Born in the USA, and then Nebraska.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because this is a big debate that I've run into. I've seen probably 20-something Bruce shows, and usually when
that's
I go...
That's staggering.
Yeah, dude.
So since – I mean, you said you weren't even really a huge fan until your early 20s, college.
Yeah. 2007 is the first time I saw him, and then I just went – I went on in like a methodical tear.
How
like,
did you afford that?
I just made it happen. I don't care. Like I turned like vacations – I built vacations around seeing him.
Really? That's smart.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
See him in Paris or something crazy.
Because here's a Bruce – fans, hopefully there's one listening.
Yeah, hopefully you're out there.
Here's a life hack, Bruce life hack that I've come to realize. Go see him at weird places because he tends to actually bring it the best there.
I saw him in Rochester.
Yes, when you told me that, I was like, I bet you that was a great show.
Probably the greatest show I've ever seen.
Greensboro, I saw him, which was unbelievable. When Jay Weinberg was drumming and Jake was and Clarence was still alive, and then this time around, the River Tour, Penn State. It was his best.
Really?
The best I saw him perform was in
so
Penn State.
So you saw him do the Full River album
like four times.
I saw him do it twice. And then you also saw the stadium tour, which he did in a rave.
And
of
I
shit.
Legitimately regret not going to every single one of those stadium shows.
Really?
Because they completely. Because I saw the River four times, and I was like, okay, I'm a little over this, but I still love this. And then, dude, the stadium show, he came out to New York Serenade, which I never seen with the symphony.
Love that.
And oh, I was like, man. I was like blacked out. Like, yeah. Aside from being drunk, I was the whole time I just kept looking at Megan. I was like, so good.
It's unbelievable.
So good. It's too good. It's so good. And especially at the time, I remember being so seeped in the election and then just seeing him, I was like, oh, this is truth. Everything else is complete bullshit.
Yeah. It's almost to a point where I listen to the guy's catalog and I go, why does anybody write any songs? I mean, after Dylan that's really him, funny. You're like, okay, so what music is left to be
I will
made?
Say this. Unequivocally, Bruce Springsteen has ruined all other concerts for me. Absolutely ruined it. Like, mm-hmm. I will go see a band now and I'll be like, oh, that's cute. You got a little banjo up there? Yeah. Oh, you guys go for an hour 45. That's cute with your little show. You got some guitars. Oh, that's cute, that little guitar solo. Because he is it's insane. Like, I can't describe it. Obviously, you know, unless you go.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane.
I saw, so I've been to a ton of amazing shows in 2 years, right? Stones, everybody you can name. Adele, everybody that's anybody.
Yeah.
Tour
oh, that's
the last
awesome,
2 years
dude.
I've seen. I saw McCartney this summer.
That's great.
In the same venue you saw him in that he opened, the MetLife. And it's funny you say that because I felt the same way. Whereas much as he's a legend, I was like, I really want to see Bruce. I wish Bruce would.
When does Bruce come out? Who's the closest that's come to him that you've seen? The Stones? I heard the Stones rule.
Stones. But see, I also – sometimes I look at the Stones, and even though Bruce is legend and royalty, they carry it. Like royalty.
Yeah. I mean, but so Bruce says in his book, he's like, I love that line. He's like, they invented my job.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, and he's right. And I get it. And they know it. And there's a certain way they go about their business where it is business.
That's great.
And even when they're doing Gimme Shelter, you have even though you're into it, you get this little feeling where it's like, it's business. I've checked in and now it's business. I'm going to give you your money's worth and then I'm going to bounce. And there's something about Bruce that was more connected and engaging and more so they're a little bit more business and I mean this Bruce was just so much more engaging and there was something about not knowing what was gonna happen next,
like
everything was new.
That's so cool, man. That's the best. So my question that I always want to ask huge Bruce fans is like, or I find there's always this huge divide with the old fans and the new fans. It's like the old fans, like, they don't have time for the new stuff. They're over it. They don't care. They want to leave.
Yeah.
Bruce used to make good songs. And then me, and I think there's a lot of new fans that are like, I love a lot of the new stuff. Do I think it's as good as like The River? No. But yeah. I think like I love Wrecking Ball. I think that album
Wrecking Ball is amazing.
No, awesome.
No. The whole album is amazing.
I think Wrecking Ball is like a fucking
Ghost of Tom Joad. Fucking great album.
I think like I don't like this thing with music fans where, especially the hardcore fans, they always hate the new stuff. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry that we haven't sat with this song for 30 years. You didn't lose your virginity to the song. It doesn't mean it's not a fucking great song.
That's a really good point.
So, like, I always try to be like, whenever they play the new stuff, I'm always trying to be like, yeah, because I know everyone's leaving. Everyone's going to the bathroom. I'm like, no, dude, this is great stuff, man. Like, and I'm so stoked for his new album, like, whenever that comes out. Like, I can't wait to listen to it. I'm sure it won't all be great. But
I'm dying to go to one of those shows where it's just him doing acoustic.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be, I think.
That's probably what he's going to do.
I think it's the next thing.
And I want
to
go.
I know. I'm pissed I didn't go to Devils and Dust. I wish I would have because I actually like that album too. So
it's a really great album,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see how you can look at a guy's body of work and as an artist go, nah.
But
I get it. Like, what you said is true. It's that I didn't lose my virginity to this. I didn't, dance at my wedding to this song. Like, all that poor shit. You know, like, this is a guy, like, is constantly – his creative button just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Because I've seen Billy Joel now twice.
Oh, cool.
I love it. But I realized, like, after the second time seeing him, I'm like, oh, this guy really hasn't performed any new music since, like, 94.
Wow.
Admittedly. He
it's just River of Dreams over and over again.
It's just what he does. That's what he does.
Several times.
Which, I mean, with a catalog like that, great. The guy can play four
hours. Who cares, yeah.
And no one can touch him because every song is, like, a hit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I want to really respect the effort. I want to really be like, I love this new stuff. Like, he's still trying. Like, mm-hmm. Steve Van Zandt said in that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame speech, he's like, Bruce is still writing songs at an unnecessarily high level.
Yeah, that's right. That's,
and
I
so it's like,
line.
I love that line. He's right. Yeah. He doesn't have to be doing this, but he is. Yeah. It's like, dude, that makes me even more excited to see him, even though it's not, like, as good as it used to be. I just think it's so hack for music fans to be like, I like their old stuff better. Yeah. I'm like, dude, come on. Everybody says that. Everybody says that. There's no band where people are like, I only like their new stuff. It's like how old stuff's always better.
Stones, even their new stuff, a lot of it's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Voodoo Lounge, not necessarily new, I get it. Voodoo Lounge is great. The album they did, the last one was good. I mean, there's always something there.
Yeah, dude, and it's exactly. Like, Bruce will release, this will be 12 songs. I bet you two or three will be awesome.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the thing is, because the way pop music, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Where that kind of stuff can even get...
Yes.
The kind of airplay that it probably deserves.
And that's the other thing is, like, exactly, if he released Darkness now, people would be like, eh, I like the old stuff
which
better.
Is so crazy.
I think isn't they would. Crazy? I think they would be like, eh, I liked Magic better.
I'm looking for that one thing that transcends that whole outlook, because I'm kind of, I guess it's a phrasing, disenfranchised with the fact that Godfather couldn't be made now.
Yeah.
All these great movies that I love. Even movies that aren't even in my era, but movies that I think are really great that are slower, can't be made.
Right.
Because they would never make them today because, like, it's fucking
well,
too
so
slow.
Another way into Bruce that I had, which I didn't really realize, was I took this class in college, and they said about how because of, like, conglomeration and the way the music business is, mm-hmm. that Bruce got a 3-record deal. His first two were bombs,
right out of the gate,
and they
right,
said that
yeah.
if this happened, if he was alive today, that he never would have got the third shot.
So the first one, Greetings.
Greetings
from,
bombed.
Yeah, Greetings bombed. But Greetings is great.
I love Greetings.
But you know what, though? The, like, growing up, like, 18 tracks version
yeah.
is unbelievable.
Oh, my
it's
God.
So much better than the original for
oh
some reason
God.
To me. And then the next one.
Wild and Innocent is like this fun party album.
Yeah,
wish he actually went back to more fun stuff like that. But they both bombed.
Yeah.
They were critically acclaimed, and they both bombed. And they basically that's why he said, I went for absolute broke on Born to Run. But, like, if he was around now,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that record he would have. Obviously, he would have got his music out because of Spotify and stuff, but
yeah.
I think it would have been way different.
Yeah. And you never would have found him like that.
Yeah, so it's really interesting.
I think that there's something missing now.
Yeah.
If you can't go out and discover – I mean, and I'm not saying they're – everyone has a YouTube page, every band.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's tons of great – there's still music being made. There's tons of indie music being made. There's a scene. I know this. But the fact of the matter is it is so hard now to find it. You really
yeah.
have to be searching for it. It's not going
to
hit you in the face.
I listen to Discover Weekly on Spotify. It's like the only way that I could find
new stuff.
Yeah, that's because I know it's out there. But it's like, yeah, I'm not finding it on the radio.
Yeah.
That's the last place I'm going to find new.
There has to be a way to get something like that back, that feeling back that isn't – because, you know, I'll always – just because of the shows I do, I have to look at whatever the top 10 of everything is, right?
Yeah.
So you look on iTunes and what the most downloadable ones are.
Right.
You look at Billboard and top 50 and you're like, why? I don't understand. And I would hate to think that it's because I'm so old, but – I'm 35. I'm not 55. There's
yeah.
no way that I'm that, especially because I have to have my finger on the pulse to some degree of what's
yeah.
going on. Just like you do. You're writing
yeah.
to appeal to a larger brand. You have to know.
I think people just get I think a lot of the good stuff has just been filtered out, but I also think that those fans are becoming more rabid in some ways. If they find their – then and also you have to go to all their shows now because that's the only way you can get them.
The only way you can see them.
Only way you can see them. Only way you can give them money.
You ever watch that Sonic Highways show that Dave Grohl did?
No, that's cool, though.
You've heard of it, though.
I definitely heard of it, yeah. I love Dave Grohl, man.
It's so –
he's
say
super
name, Dave Grohl?
Yeah. I always
say it wrong.
That dude is so inspiring, man. I love that dude.
You now that he's like the – when you know, now that you know a lot about him, sometimes I go, was he like the real talent in that band?
Yeah, man.
Like, doesn't it make – you know, I know that's sacrilege to a lot of you Nirvana fans.
Yeah, you're
going to
get fucking –
we got a lot of hate mail. We got
a
fucking
– 17-year-old.
My window.
T-shirt.
But that guy's unbelievable. So the show, if you haven't seen it, it's a show where the Foo Fighters go and make a track of a new album in all these different musically inclined cities, and it studies the city's history of music, and it's awesome.
That's so cool.
He has this great line in it that relates to what we're talking about where he says, you know, I think the city was Nashville, don't quote me, but one of the guys they're interviewing is this longtime producer for country music, and he says, you know, I can't even make a song now unless it says – a girl needs to shake her sugar maker
and some other corny ass shit. He goes, I can't even make a song, and I'm not doing that. And it talks about how there's a formula, and wherever there's a formula, there's going to be somebody working against the formula that's going to create something different.
That everybody likes.
You know, to find their congregation, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Jason Isbell is this singer-songwriter I like a lot who actually Bruce likes too. He said that when he used to record all this music in Nashville for other bands, and then when everybody would leave, he would work on his stuff. Mm-hmm. And he found a band to make his own music, like, after hours.
Yeah.
And now he's pretty popular. Like, he tours, he's doing well.
And they featured some artists that are new
and
popular, like Zach Brown Band, that I thought, oh, wow, what a great way. That guy's a cool guy.
Yeah, seems absolutely.
Seems like a great guy. There's a lot of bands that I didn't give a chance to because I thought they were a part of this.
Yes.
This cloud of shit. And then I got to see them on that show, and I got a newfound respect.
Right. They're out there, man. I do think they're out there. I mean, they're not Bruce, but they're out there.
That's the thing. Is no one is Bruce.
As long as we're clear that they're not Bruce, yeah.
No one is Bruce. That's not true, yeah. The problem. So, to kind of segue into the final chapter of our little interview here, reading about how depressed that guy gets.
Yeah.
Gave me some hope because I get really depressed and sometimes I thought it was associated solely with where my career was or something.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, the guy pretty much has done it all. Yes. And not done it all like he's made a lot of money and he has fame. The dude has got the highest medal of any civilian can receive.
I mean, everything.
Everything that you can do, he's done.
Oscar,
Grammys, everything.
Tight pants.
I mean, great shape. He's like 66, in amazing shape. The guy has it all. And to hear that story is about him not being able to get out of bed, it's inspiring.
Well, I almost also feel like, how could he not be depressed? Because I know that with us, we're like, comedians are like adrenaline junkies, right? Like, we're trying to always chase the buzz of performing for a good show, getting killing.
Yeah.
Dude, this dude goes out in front of 50,000 people who are obsessed with you. Then you have to go live a life? Like, you have to go to breakfast.
Pick up the milk.
You have to go, you have to, like, log on. You have to get an email password. Like, I don't even know how you go back down from that.
And when it's 100,000, like when you see him play in Barcelona or something, you're like, how do you go home?
Yeah.
And like, do anything normal.
That's why I do think people like him should get, like, a free pass in their personal lives because dude, we have no idea what that's like. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Everyone dreams of that, but you realize the price you pay.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, must be brutal.
So, I think, like,
you don't seem like a guy that would wallow in his depression. I don't know you that well, though.
No, man. I have a pretty generally positive outlook. But this career, like most of us, it gets me. I had a recent bout of bout of New York just kicking the shit out of me yesterday.
Right?
Just piled up, and I was like, okay, I'm done. I still run into those times, but it's been less and less than it used to be. So, yeah. But I do a lot of, like, self-help work, so it's probably – I think I like to attribute it to that, I think. I don't know.
Like, you follow the Dalai Lama on Twitter?
That's the most – that's, like,
that's the self-help he does.
That, I feel like that is all you need, man. Just get those tweets.
He just keeps retweeting the Dalai Lama, and then he just feels better. That's part of his meditation.
Just retweet, and then I just lose followers. Hey, is this guy the Dalai Lama? This guy's not funny.
Does he work for the dialogue?
This guy's not funny at all. He's very serious. So, yeah, you know, yeah. So, it's like a collection of all that stuff.
So, the show's Gandhi. And, and what else? Plug it up.
Gandhi Is At You, every Wednesday at 9 o'clock at Lucky Jack's. Check out Celebrities Have Issues. I guess just go to my website, BrendanFitzgibbons.com. I got some stuff on there.
Yeah, I'm on BrendanFitzgibbons.
I got the Built by Lance Weiss, no big deal. And I got, like,
it's nice.
It's really nice.
Lance built this.
The he's really good,
a lot,
man.
Of skills.
Yeah, he's really good.
Jokes, and his face is even on it because it's the Gandhi picture. I'm looking at it.
Is.
This fucking guy made it, and he put his face
on
it. Unbelievable, this Lance. He finds a way to slip himself in everywhere,
man. So, yeah. No, yeah, check it out, man.
So it's
good.
Wednesdays at 9.
And then, my website, I have, like, you know, my videos from Celebrity Head of Issues. Some videos from Alternatino, the sketch thing I'm working on with Arturo Castro. And, yeah, it's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You're great, dude.
Thanks, man. This is good.
We're going to go to a Bruce show.
Let's
together.
Do this.
It's going to be amazing.
We should wait in line now.
Hey, plug your Twitter, though, real quick.
Oh, yeah. At @Brendan_Fitz.
Spell it.
BRENDAN _FITZ.
Beautiful. Thanks, man.
Thank you, bro.
I want to thank my guest, Brendan Fitzgibbons. Brendan, my boy, thank you so much, my friend. We have the same favorite album, which is awesome. It's awesome. Which is why I'm closing the show out with a song from that album.
In fact, I'm closing the show out and entering the show with Something in the Night because you and I have a kinship, and that is my favorite song. So it works out for everybody. Make sure you guys go follow Brendan, all the appropriate social media handles he just mentioned. He's a nice Irish boy. He's a nice Irish boy with a name like Brendan Fitzgibbons. Just want to thank him for coming on. You're great, my friend. All right, so the show, at Broken Tailed, BrokenTailed. That is on every social media platform you can find, with the exception of Snapchat. We don't have that just yet, but everything else. Also, you can email BrokenTailed@gmail.com, and we will put out any emails that we get that we think are interesting. So, I want to thank everybody for listening. I am Josh Accardo, at Josh Accardo, on Instagram, Twitter, and Snaps Chats. I have to go to LA in a couple days, hopefully do some cool shows out there like I always do for you guys. So stay tuned for that, and I want you guys to have a great rest of your week, and hope all is well.